Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello, everybody. Good to have you along. It's the game on Sunday. Michael Lester here with you. And, of course, we're reviewing everything that's been happening so far in football and hurling in terms of the Alliance Leagues, naturally. And, as usual, I'm joined by Tomás Mulcahy and Martin Carney for their thoughts on everything. Gentlemen, how is the form?
Good stuff.
Martin, let's look back at the weekend's football. For a start off, we were talking a couple of weeks ago about Mayo from the point of view that they had a difficult enough start. They had to go down to Salt Hill to play Galway in their opening game. Then at the weekend, they had the Dubs, of course, you know, come through both those matches with wins and obviously off to a flying start, which must be very encouraging.
Well, it's very encouraging for Mayo supporters. It's very encouraging for the team, and in particular, it's very encouraging for Kevin McStay, because, you know, he's looking to build on the league success from last year. And he couldn't have got a better start than what has been the case. The other night, Michael, it has to be said, they played second fiddle to Dublin for long periods of the game, I thought. Early in particular, in the first 20 minutes, they found it very difficult to break Dublin down. And Dublin, particularly to their wing-backs, Jack McCaffrey, and they have a young McEnany lad, I think, on the other wing. I hadn't seen him before, Brett McEnany. I was very impressed with them. But Mayo weathered that storm, and I think within a minute of each other, they got points from Paul Towie and Bob Toohey, and that seemed to kickstart their half. And even though they had been playing, with the wind, they still kind of went in 8 points all at half time. Didn't look likely, as I said, after 20 minutes when they were 6-2 or something like that down. But in the second half then, I thought, you know, Dublin came out at a great opening 15 minutes or so. Mayo didn't score in that period. And it was really the goal that Stephen Cohen got, I think, that actually kind of changed everything. You had attendance, actually, Michael, I'd say of around 17,000 in Castlebar. Now, for the first week of February, to have that many at a National League game is quite an achievement in itself. But once he got that goal, and all of a sudden, the entire ground came alive. And from there to the end, I think the goal rattled Dublin a little bit. They shot a couple of very bad wides. But from there to the end, it could have gone either way. But what I loved about the Mayo winner, Michael, was the nature of the score. Like, we're living in an era of football where everything is about regulation and order. And games are noted for kind of systems and all that kind of thing. Well, the winning point that Fergal Boland got was as a consequence of a bit of quick thinking, improvisation, and risk, Mike. Risk is something in Gaelic football that has gone out the window. He was looking up, he was talking to Killian O'Connor, so who would take the kick. Dublin got a little bit kind of sucked into that, and all of a sudden, O'Donoghue saw Boland loose, hit the ball to him, ping over the bar, kick out, full time whistle. It was a reward for just trying something different, trying something off script. And I think it gave them a deserved win on the night, even though it has to be said and balanced, they probably played second fiddle to Dublin for a long period of the game.
It was like, Martin, I suppose, the famous Mikey Sheehy goal against Dublin and Paddy Cullen back in the day. Quick thinking, nothing like it.
Ah, well, it's good to see Michael, Bob and Mayo, they're quick thinking in early February. That's good for the rest of the season.
Tomorrow, what you have got to look at, you have to look at Dublin, though, in all of this. Dublin, like, when you see the results that Meath and Kildare have had, their so-called big rivals in Leinster, when you see the early season results they have had that have come to nothing, like, Dublin don't have to be right until the month of June and July.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, I thought for the first 20 minutes the other night, Tomás and Michael, over the first 20 minutes of the game or so, they came out and I thought, you know, they had levels of fitness that weren't at Mayo's range, so to speak. But in that opening 20 minutes, they got a glimpse of what it can be like when they get into full throttle later on. Because they'll sleepwalk through Leinster. There's no doubt about it. They'll sleepwalk through Leinster. They'll become number one seed for the All-Ireland series. And they have only 2 months of football really to prepare for. So they're quite, even though they haven't picked up any points at the moment, they're quite happy in where they are right now. And when we did see them good over those two periods in the first and second halves, they were highly impressive.
Is it time, Martin, for an open draw in the championship? Because this has been mentioned so many times over the last couple of years. Like, Leinster has really, of the four provinces, Leinster has really, in football terms, gone backwards. Like, as you said, I mean, okay, Dublin are good. There's nobody is denying that. But everybody else has just kind of fallen off the cliff.
Yeah, well, that's true, Michael. I think it's a fair point. I mean, there's only one team in Leinster at the moment. With respect to us, there's only one team in Munster, and that's Kerry. Whereas you have a highly competitive...
that's what they're talking about there, Martin. Is it all right? Sorry, yeah. All right. That's football. All right. Okay. I agree with you. Yeah.
Yeah. But at the moment, like, I mean, when you see the beat, now, in fairness to Cork, I don't know how the scheduling happened, like, but they had two away games, one to kind of Donegal in the opening game and the last day against Louth and lost both. But on the former senior season from them, they're not going to get into the Munster final. And as a consequence, they could end up in the Tailteann Cup this year, unless their league form finishes quickly. But getting back to Michael's point, I think it is time to look at it. But Michael, we're not going to get that change in the short term. Remember,
no.
I played in a championship over my entire career where there's a one shot. You one shot only. If you lost the first round, it was good night and a down, you were gone for the summer. In 2001, they brought in, I think it was, the open draw, or the back door, so to speak. Sorry about the open draw, it was the back door. And that continued on to us in 2022, about 20, 21 years that kind of continued. But they still are kind of pussyfooting around the big thing, which I believe myself should be an open draw for championship among the top 16 teams. We haven't got that. And as a consequence of that, and, you know, there is teams just being able to, as I used the word earlier in the conversation, sleepwalk into All-Ireland series as it is at the moment, in particular the top teams in Munster and Leinster.
Martin, Michael, could I just ask Martin there for his thoughts in terms of this, you mentioned Cork, and because of the two losses in the league and the danger of maybe not being qualified for Sam Maguire, where did all this come out of?
Well, all of this came out of with the new system that they have for the All-Ireland Championship and the Tailteann Cup. That's where it all came out of. Like, basically what you have now...
my point is now, right, you have to be at the top of your game at a time of the year when a team like Dublin, you mentioned, doesn't have to be ready until June or July, right? And for other counties, they have to be at the top of their game to quality or to win league matches or get results, or else they're penalised heavily.
But penalised heavily, you can look at it that way. But the way the structure is, like, it's the provincial finalists are the number one seeds, or the provincial winners. The runners-up are the number two seeds. But after that, Tomas, you're correct. You need to be doing well in your league. And yeah. like for example, Meath found to their cost a couple of years ago that they ended up in the Austin Cup, despite their history, despite the traditions, despite their successes. And, the fame, so to speak, and the reputation that they have in Gaelic football. And like this year in Munster, you're going to have one of three teams, Clare, Tipperary or Waterford, in a Munster final and therefore a runner-up. So they're going to be a number two seed. You're going to have, Meath will be in the Sam Maguire this year. But you could end up with the bottom two teams in Division 2 ending up actually in the Tolkien Cup. And basically that means, as you said, Tomas, that it's a case of have and have nots, that for the have nots, if they want to play Sam Maguire, they have to be ready from the word go, get sufficient points to ensure, in particular in Division 2, that they get high enough up the table to end up in the top 12, in the top 4 or 5 there, to avoid the ignominy. And I don't like using the word ignominy, it's unfair really to use it, but to avoid having to play in the Tolkien Cup.
But this is my point, gentlemen, that the more the GAA tweak all of these things and add all these complications, the more bizarre the thing is coming with every passing year, as far as I can see anyway.
Yeah, and that's true, Michael. But let's be honest about it. We talked last week about, you look in Munster, the major stadia that they have there in Thurles, in Killarney and in Cork. You can't fill those stadia too often. You can't simply get crowds there to kind of make those stadia financially viable to run more or less on their own steam. And this new system that we have, where you have a kind of a separate competition in the months of late May, June and July, is basically it has been in some way motivated on economic grounds. So as maybe more and more games would be played at these places, and therefore make the finances of these more viable and more economical.
Oh, I know. It's as I said, so much to talk about from that point of view. But lookers, let's talk hurling for a moment, Tomas, and what we've seen so far. Couple of interesting games last time out. I noticed a lot of people, Tomas, are talking about Clare beating Cork the last day, are talking about Clare and kind of getting excited about their prospects going forward.
Yeah, I think, the beating really, look, they've always been very hard to beat in Ennis, Michael. They did it last weekend against Cork on a scoreline of 125 to 219, right? And, like, there were times in the game when they looked very, very accomplished. And they were without three or four of the big names in terms of, like, John Conlon and Tony Kelly and these guys, right? You know, so, like, we mentioned last week, the same as Martin, that the league is being used to blood new players, give new guys the opportunity. But I think Brian Long will be very, very happy with the result. I was expecting a lot more from Cork, to be honest with you. I would be disappointed with Cork, even though they scored 219. And I know Pat Ryan's trying to blood a few new players as well. But I was looking at the opening National Hurling League matches as Cork to go tennis and make a statement for the rest of the campaign. Sometimes in the game, we look very good, got two very good goals. But the period after halftime worries me from Cork perspective, when you expect the team to come out and push on. You know, they were level at halftime and just to push on. But I think they conceded 7 points. And I read somewhere yesterday where they kind of, because of turnovers and working the ball out short, they conceded 115 throughout the match. And look, that hasn't happened on Sunday last, that was the first occasion that has happened. This happened for Cork for the last 2 to 3 years where it's not about their game plan. It's about the opposition knowing what Cork are going to do with the ball. They're going to work it short. They're going to put it to corner back. He might turn, give it to the full back. They might work it through the lines to the centre back. And all the same in football, the same in soccer, or the same in rugby. When you hear this press, when Clare pushed up, they turned over the ball so many, many times. And Cork have got to change. Yeah, you can do it on the odd occasion, but simply the opposition now know exactly the game plan that Cork are going to put into play. And that is a concern. That's a worry, because it's been like that for the last 2 to 3 years.
And but if you pick up a point on that, I watched the game. I enjoyed the game. I remember commenting to myself in the first half, how Cork had only scored maybe 5 or 6 times. Like, two of those were goals, obviously.
Yes,
and
yes.
It didn't give them ballast. But speaking on the issue of goals, I thought that the clear goal that I think it was Shane Amory got.
Yes,
was an absolute beauty. David Fitzgerald, I think, gave the pass. But it was the weight of the pass, it was the accuracy, and it was the timing of the run from Maury and the instant control of the ball that I thought was just it was there for everybody to watch and to kind of ooh at. Like, it was a collector's item that, and it's something that should be shown again and again in coaching in coaching seminars. That this Absolutely. Is what striking a ball is like. This is, you know, rather than the handing off the ball, the pan passing that you get so much of now, or the throw nearly that you get in hurling. It was a delightful little cameo in the game. And it's something that, if you wanted to show to children that what hurling is about, this was a great example of it.
Yeah, and I think, Michael, your point is right. People are getting excited about Clare. People think Clare are now the biggest threat to maybe Limerick come championship time. I think Brian Lowen has done a wonderful job there. He's given youngsters their opportunity, but he's given other guys kind of the belief that it'd be there maybe over a couple of years to perform again. And they look a very, very strong, united unit, playing for each other, playing a nice brand of hurling. We remember at times we would have been critical of Clare in terms of the sharp game, Tony Kelly going back into his old full back line, picking up possession. Yeah, you're not seeing that anymore. It hasn't become the Tony Kelly team. There's other stars standing up, and David Fitzgerald and Shane Amory and these guys, you know. And I think there was a WhatsApp message going around the other day. Joe Biden had a bit of delight about Shane Amory then wink forward, and he said he should be there for the rest of the championship and stuff like that as well. So, there is something in Clare that you have to admire. There's a steel, there's a resolve about them. They're physically a big team, and they're backing it up with their hurling, because 125 is a great scoring.
It certainly is.
But equally, 219 was a good response from Cork, even though a lot of those scores were got late in the game. And again, like with Cork, I know they're missing a good number of players, Tomás, and like, I enjoy watching them, but like, traditionally, again, I'm going back to this old traditional thing. If you want, you kind of, we're looking for a response from Cork. Those of us from a distance are looking for a response from Cork as the team that will actually kind of throw down the gauntlet to Limerick and make life misery for Limerick to prevent them getting their 5 in a row. But on the evidence of what we saw last Sunday, again, maybe they're a little bit off that.
Still on
well,
February.
They're going to tomorrow. They're going to
February, Mark.
Tomás, having said that, Tomás, they're going to have to throw down the gauntlet next time out, because they're up against Kilkenny.
Yeah, and that, Michael, that's kind of the second weekend of fixtures, and like, Kilkenny will be disappointed at some stages. They look to be kind of well in control against Wexford, and for the match to come on level at 216 each, right? Great result for Wexford. Limerick, as we expected last weekend, had an easy win over Antrim. John Kiley saying he's going to kind of reduce the panel in the next week or so, giving some guys an opportunity to stake a claim for that panel. Waterford, very impressive in terms of maybe after a slow start against Offaly, scoring 320, which is very, 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 very high scoring. So if you bring all that forward into next weekend, you have that old rivalry, as we've seen so many times, Waterford v Clare below in Walsh Park. with Mr. Lone and Mr. Pitts. So that's one to watch out for. And then you have Cork and Kilkenny on Saturday night, Wexford v. Offaly, Westmeath v. Limerick. And Limerick would look at this one to say, get our second win, make themselves safe in the league campaign, and then maybe plan a bit further for the drive for five, knowing that kind of their status in the league is secure and stuff like that as well. So with a couple of matches to go, and then you have Tipperary v. Galway, which is going to be an incredible game. One probably that maybe stands out, Michael, in terms of Dublin after their feat against Tipperary, a very impressive win by Tipperary in Parnell Park, is they go to play Antrim. And bit of a banana skin all going up there, because lots of teams going up there in the past would have felt that they'd get an easy win against Antrim. This is a big call now for Dublin to get a result above against Antrim.
Oh, for sure. There's no doubt about that. Yeah, that Tip Galway match on Sunday, 4:15 in Semple Stadium.
Look, and again, look, Shefflin, I suppose, would be looking at this and saying, okay, this is a big test for us. Let's go. Let's see where we're at. And against the Tipperary team that I think Liam Gallagher's made no bones about a club. They want a good run in the league. They want to take it seriously. Jake Morris, the captain himself, you know, kind of, I'd say, taking a bit of pride seriously and being appointed captain, coming out and saying, yeah, we are going to take this league very, very seriously. And again, you're using it to blood new players, but for Tip, kind of on the back of where they were last year, they need a good run. And that's probably the tie of the league campaign. Maybe this Sunday is Tipperary v. Galway in Turles, yeah.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
For sure of it. Martin, let's just talk football again for a little while. Looking forward to what we've got coming up in the next round of the league. What stands out to you?
Well, the standard the next day, obviously, is I think anyway, Mayo versus Kerry in Tralee. I think Kerry will be keen to get Mayo at this stage of the year, even though it's early on. And they will be smarting still from the defeat that they had as Mayo fans in the championship in May, actually, in Killarney. I think Mayo ended up beating them by 4 or 5 points. On top of that, Kerry will be looking to take their team on a couple of notches higher than they were the last day against Monaghan. I thought they were very impressive against Monaghan. I thought with the two lads coming in, with the Clipper brothers coming in, I thought they were particularly impressive. And the entire, you know, you saw, I think, Tyke Morley being brought in at some stage of the game. But they will want to get Mayo. They will want to bring Mayo down to size next weekend or the weekend after next, rather. And Kevin McStay will want to make, I think, a statement to further, shall we say, the progress that has been evident in Mayo up to now, and get 2 more points. And with that, he's safe in the Division 1, and he can maybe afford from there to experiment a little bit more than has been the case up to now. Like, what I mean by that, Michael, up to now, really, the only new players that he has introduced, the brand new players, so to speak, that he's brought into the team, has been a wing forward and a young lad from Conor Reid, he's a lad from Whydavitts. But all of the other lads, like, okay, you may not have heard much of Paul Cowell before, Brian Toohey before, but they were used at different stages last year. So the only, I would say, if he can get a result, he'll bring down a strong team to Kerry. And if he can get a result there, he'd be keen to get that. Then he can go in and bring in a lot more players in the games further on, knowing that his status in Division One is secure.
I suppose over the next couple of weeks, and we've already been doing it, Martin, keeping an eye on Derry and Mickey Hart. And of course, the classic example of that was the last day out, of course, which was Derry and Tyrone. That was an eye-catcher.
Well, it was an eye-catcher. But you know something, Michael? It ended up much ado about nothing.
Yeah.
You know, we'd all been kind of, you know, anticipating a right kind of raucous atmosphere, an edgy game where there was a lot of kind of, shall we say, less than friendly exchanges. We'll be very euphemistic about it. But what we saw after, we saw lovely photographs. There was familiarity and warmth. Mickey and Brian Dewar shaking hands. And there was none of the edge to it. Okay, you had a good crowd there. You had 12,000 people. You're nearly capacity crowd in Celtic Park. But like a lot of the games on Sunday, Michael, and you had this across the board in Kerry or in Clones, in Derry, and in Roscommon, the win played it made a mockery of it in some respects. By that I mean, like, at halftime in the game of the Derry and Tyrone game, I think Derry went in leading 8 points to 5. Now, I didn't think that was enough, Michael. I thought with the wind in the second half, Tyrone would go to town. But they only scored 4 points, and two of those were in injury time, actually. And then that tells his own story. And with Conor Glass kind of mastering midfield, and, you know, with the lack of intensity and bite and all of that in it, kind of Derry cruised to victory. And they will be looking, as I said, they will be looking to build, like Mickey has made no secret about it. This is a 6 games, 6 wins, kind of cup added into that. And he will be looking to continue on a winning streak, you know, over the next couple of months. And he is, I'm not saying he's won the hearts and minds of the Derry supporters yet.
Yeah.
Certainly hasn't kind of ended up in the gallows. And you know, he is in every single game he's put out a very, very strong team. And he will be very pleased with the response he has got. And when you think about it, Michael, the Maharag lads that won the All-Ireland club with Glenn, all of those have played and there hasn't been a problem. And Conor Glass has ended up man of the match in the last two.
Yeah, that was an interesting one because we thought, as you said there, we thought he would give these guys, you know, a bit of a break after their club exploits.
Yeah, we thought that, and we looked at the beaten team actually in that as well. We look at St. Bridget's who were beaten, and they brought in a number of their lads last weekend. And so players at the moment, you know, maybe to be honest with you, maybe tiredness is a state of mind in football. And I'm not quite sure that it can be physical also. But like I saw, for example, with Jack Carney in Mayo, having won the All-Ireland Junior a couple of years ago with Kilmina, found it very, very difficult to kind of show any form last year. But
Martin, just on that one though, like, they're amateur players, right? No matter what you say, they're not robots. I mean, can they keep that going for
the remainder of the league? I don't know.
Are you to a championship, right? You take the Kerry, the Cliffords.
Yes, that's right. No, I agree with you, Thomas. It's very, very difficult. And you factor in Sigerson to that as well.
It's Sigerson, right? Yeah, I'm just giving an Harling side of it, yeah.
I can only speak for the Mayo lads. Like the likes of Ryan O'Donoghue and Rory Brickington, I think the fullback McBrien and the Tommy Conroy, they have played 4 games in 12 days, actually. Two of them are with UCD, two of them are with UCG, and then games against Galway and against Dublin the other night. And honestly, I just think far too much is being asked of these lads. I know a number of counties, I won't name them, have pulled their inter-county players from the Sigerson. They've pulled their, the managers have not allowed their players play Sigerson.
Is that right or wrong, though, Martin?
That's unethical, as far as I'm concerned. It's wrong. And I saw Colm O'Rourke talking about earlier, a couple of weeks back, about Sigerson has been played at a time of year when it's not. It's wrong. It's just simply wrong. It should be played in the month of December.
But absolutely right. I'd have the same point, right? You can make the same point in terms of the Fitzgibbon guys that are out Tuesday night, Wednesday night, or a Thursday night midweek in January, and in the worst of conditions, playing Fitzgibbon. But it seems that managers feel that they're at the top of the game because they have training, and they're putting them into an inter-county setup at the weekend then as well. Do you know if you understand what I'm saying? Because these guys are training more regular than maybe an inter-county team. They're playing matches on a regular basis. They're at a level of fitness that they need for a National League campaign. But is there anybody sitting down and say, okay, why not pre-Christmas, let's get Fitzgibbon and Sigerson done and dusted. They're back at college in September. Yeah. And progress into a National League campaign then with everybody on board without having three and four matches, you say, within 12 days.
Yeah, well, I agree with you on that. And I'm repeating myself, really, Colm O'Rourke, who's managing these at the moment, has come up against that issue and has spoken about that. But then you have to look at why do guys go to college, primarily to go to college to get a degree? And you'll find coming up to Christmas, an awful lot of them have assignments to kind of get up and running and get into.
And a couple of rag weeks and a couple of parties and all that side of parties as well. No, I didn't go to college. Dr. Khan always said to me, Tomas, you need to get your Leaving Cert checked again, right? But
but you know, well, to me, I always regarded,
so you don't upset the Christmas party, Martin. All right.
I always regarded my time in Galway as my time in Disneyland. It was the most fantastic town to be in going college. It was just wonderful. It was football, and I think academia suffered. We put it gently. And I think you don't understand that, Michael Lester.
Well, I've always said the thing about Galway City is it has a bit of everything. It's a university town. It's a holiday hotspot, if you like, and a big town as well, of course, apart from anything like all the rest of it, you know. But that was one of the lucky kind of boxes ticked for anybody going to university to go to a place like that.
I know, but it wasn't a big turn. Michael, it was such a familiar like everything was in reach within walking distance. Michael, it was a lovely place and still is a wonderful, wonderful place to go to.
Yes,
I suppose, Michael, the clamour is on the other side. Martin, you're saying about the county managers pulling the guys for Sigerson or Fitzgibbon. The clamour is coming, and I see a lot of kind of former college players here in Cork kind of adamant, right, that for Fitzgibbon or Sigerson, they should be left play the college fixtures without having to go and play National League campaigns or train with intercounty teams. Somebody must get the fixture list right here, because it ain't working, because everything seems to be happening. And we mentioned about this compactness of the season in January, February, in terms of colleges, Fitzgibbon, Sigerson, National League campaigns, and in the county guys going back training earlier to get themselves ready.
That's right. It's unsustainable from a player health point of view, from a player welfare point of view. It's unsustainable. But the risk of injury now, if a player, due to overplaying, basically will rule a player out of the intercounty season for the rest of the year. Like, I take a case like in point of Rory Brickington last year. Rory Brickington, again, would have played college's football last year, as far as I know. He also was playing in National League football with Mayo. He was gone after the third game. Mayo played 14 games, I think, between league and championship last year. He missed the final 11 games due to an injury sustained early on. And I think overuse injuries, playing too much, is certainly kind of a thing, both in hurling and football, contributing to injuries that rule players out of big game, championship games later on in the season. And Michael and Tomas, you're right. I think myself, it has to be looked at and bring the college's football back pre-Christmas. And I think maybe it would benefit everybody.
I don't forget about the hurling as well, though, Martin, as well.
Jeez. Oh, no, no.
But would it not make sense? Would it not make sense, gentlemen, to have a tiered system? In other words, if you get on a county panel, that it should automatically rule you out of things like colleges matches and stuff like that.
You see, the nature of the GAA, Mike, the nature of the GAA, everybody claims ownership on their player. I've seen it myself here. I've seen it myself this year in a micro sense, involved with an intermediate team here in Castlebar. And I've seen myself, like, the intermediate player, the good intermediate player is kind of, shall we say, he's on the radar of the senior team. And they want to get this guy, and you're constantly kind of playing tug of war. Can I have him? Can I keep him? Or will the senior team take him? And you're right in saying maybe we should be looking at something like that. But when you don't have that, like, as I said, you have teams in hurling and football. You know, the top of the food chain is the senior intercounty plays, the senior intercounty game. And managers there, not all of them, but certainly some of them this year that I know of, have told the players who were eligible for colleges, you are not playing colleges, you're only playing with us. And that kind of sense of ownership that they have and that they claim on a player, I think, is something that maybe is wrong.
But Martin, you also have another issue in terms of the players, in terms of where they go to a certain college and there's a scholarship and there's a bursary and there's grants, right? They're obliged to play with that college, right? They have to play. And some colleges attract very good players come down because, look, you see the expansion of colleges around the country and stuff like that as well. But some guys will come and there's a scholarship and there's a grant there. And so that they're obliged, they have to fulfill a program with the college.
Very much so. They feel that sense of obligation. And those of us who are lucky enough to play college football, I mean, it was the most enjoyable football that I can look back on. I'll never forget, for example, and this is throwing in a Cork kind of dimension to it, Moss. I'll never forget the first time I played a college's game against UCC. And there was this big giant playing a fullback for Cork, a fella by the name of Moss Kane.
Yeah, and but you see, Martin, I think it was called UCK that time, University College Kerry, because there was 13 of the 15 were from Kerry. We were producing fellas for Kerry down there.
Well, there was Simon Looney, I think, played for Hurling and football for Cork at the time. And I remember he was on the UCC team, if memory serves, is certainly right. But no, you're right. It was primarily, like, the Lynch brothers were on it. Boddy and Brendan were on it.
Dan
Stabner was on it. But I remember it was this big bucket all back to it that I could not get over. And when I went to the pub afterwards, I went, the singing started. Well, I'll tell you, he was first tenor, he was bass, he was baritone, he was everything. He was a wonderful, wonderful character in my
Mass. That's Moss Keane, is it? Ball. Yeah. Moss Keane Martin, is it? Or?
All Moss I was referring to, yes.
Oh, yeah. I met him on a good few occasions with Dr. Khan as well. And what a legend that man was. Oh, what a big man was, right? And a great man for the crack and having the old cigarettes and stuff like that as well. You know?
I played to Moss and Martin in a match against Moss Keane all those years ago.
And
I'll tell you what, he didn't have to hit you. He only had to look at you.
And
you decided to stand at the other end of the pitch.
It was remarkable. And then he was such a success, made such a successful career for himself in rugby. It was a rugby international. And I can't say publicly, I asked Billy Morgan once upon a time to give me a Moss anecdote. It can't be repeated publicly here, but or in public here, but it is very, very comical. But no, he was great fun. And those bunch of lads that I came across from Cork and Kerry at the time, they were just wonderful. And to where this all came from, Michael, is just, to me, college's football was a most wonderful, wonderful, wonderful breeding ground for just making friendships and actually improving your football. Certainly where I came from in Donegal, it was wonderful to get playing against teams that were from maybe recognised footballing counties. Because remember, in Donegal, they never reached a senior provincial final until 1963.
Yes.
You know, people see Donegal now having won two All-Irelands in the last 20 years or in 1992 until now, the last 30 years, so to speak. But they never reached the provincial final until 1963. And for somebody like myself, from a county like that, to come and play with and against players from established counties, it was just an eye-opener and hugely enjoyable. And I think every guy who played college football will look back with great, great, great. And I just, great fondness of his time that he spent playing football at that time.
I know, I hear what you're saying. And when we talk about, I mentioned a moment ago there about a tiered system and that. But then I suppose if you do something like that, as you said, you take away the great experiences that a lot of lads have had playing in other levels as well, you know. So yeah, that's part.
That was the point. I didn't specify, but you have actually, as I said, made it for me, and you're absolutely right. And that's one of the experiences that I feel that will be taken from a player if that tier system.
And I suppose, Michael, if you asked every player what would they want to do, I think they'd want to play with their college if they go to college. You know, schools, you go to college, you meet so many friends and so many the county guys, and you come and you get an opportunity to play with a Nicholas English or quality like that, or, you know, within your structure. It's a great opportunity for college students, definitely.
Of course it is, yeah. All right, gentlemen, we are going to close the book for this particular episode of The Game on Sunday.
No, we're not gonna close it yet, Michael Lester, because I think you had a little bit of a celebration. Celebrate the good times, over the last couple of days, and you were pressing wrong buttons on the phone, I believe. I have a cake in front of me, and I have a couple of candles. No, right. And there is zero on it, but I don't know whether I'm to put a 5 first, 6 first. Or do I go even higher?
Do you know what you'll do now, Tomás?
Go on.
You will take those candles. And what you do with them after that, I leave it to your imagination.
Okay, I'll just blow them out.
I'll take a chance with a zero. Listen to me. You do that. You blow the, and I've got to blow you out of it right now, Andy. You know, so thank you for your time, as they say.
Talk to you soon. Have a nice week.
All right, gentlemen. Thank you very much. Enjoy the chat. Thank you, Martin. Thank you, Tomás. Talk to everybody again the next time. Hope you can join us for the next episode of The Game on Sunday. For the moment, Slán.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.